Hey guys, and welcome back to Uplift Fit Nutrition Radio. And today it's just me, your girl Lacey, and I'm super excited because we are going to talk about why you are not getting rid of your SIBO, aka small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. Well, if you guys do not know what SIBO is, I'm going to dive into what it is, what causes it, and then we're going to get a little bit deeper and talk about why you are not getting rid of your SIBO. Because let's be real, SIBO sucks. Hashtag SIBO sucks. All right. So SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, is quote unquote a condition caused by the overgrowth of bacteria in your intestines, specifically your small intestine. Now, there are various types of SIBO. We have hydrogen, methane, and sulfur dominant SIBO. Basically, all these different types of gases can cause us to have different motility and different symptoms. So I'm going to go over kind of the basics here. So we have hydrogen dominant SIBO. That one predominantly is more diarrhea focused on symptoms. We have methane dominant SIBO, in which you have sluggish motility or constipation. And then we have sulfur SIBO, which could be a combination of diarrhea or constipation. So you can have one of the gases or both of the gases. Some people even have all three of the gases. So with SIBO, what we typically see is there is truly a small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, but there also tends to be a large intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So that's the first thing that a lot of people have issues with and practitioners have issues with, is they don't treat just the small intestine. I mean, they don't treat, you know, the large intestine as well as the small intestine, and that can cause somebody to still have symptoms. So when it comes down to symptoms of SIBO, typically we have the chronic bloating, especially presents upon waking in the morning before eating any food. I see big time bloating when it comes down to just drinking water or having liquids. That's a big issue. Belching, reflux, heartburn too, brain fog, chronic fatigue, which is basically like the worst thing that you could do, is feel like you just can't get through your day. I call that just surviving, not thriving. So we have the chronic fatigue, we have diarrhea and/or constipation. Sometimes that will come and go in different weeks. Sometimes it's very confusing. People are like, oh my gosh, I've always constipated, and all of a sudden I have a little bit of liquid diarrhea. That's called backup diarrhea. That is truly constipation still. So you can have swings of constipation or diarrhea, or you have that backup diarrhea. Then we can have many skin manifestations, whether that's acne, eczema, hives, rashes. I see a lot of issues when it comes down to hair loss, hair thinning, even eyebrow thinning or loss of the eyebrow hair, especially on the outer side of the eyebrow. That typically is because you lose your nutrients and then you have nutrition deficiencies with SIBO. And then you can also develop hypothyroidism with that, but definitely a symptom. I see a lot of issues when it comes down to neurological or, you know, brain type of manifestations, whether that's brain fog or depression, anxiety, mood swings, triggering of OCD behaviors. Another symptom we can have: joint pains, muscle aches. That's because the bacteria within our small and large intestine, they produce what's called endotoxins and lipopolysaccharides, basically fancy terms for toxins that our body does not like. And then our body, you know, we have that communication to our brain saying, hey, this is not a safe space. I do not like this. This is inflammatory. And then we can have the joint pains, the muscle aches. Some people develop weight loss or weight gain with SIBO. More often with hydrogen dominant SIBO, I see diarrhea with weight loss. And then with the constipation dominant, I see weight gain. And then big time when it comes down to SIBO, you also develop nutrient deficiencies, anything from all your B vitamins to your iron, to your vitamin D, your zinc, your vitamin A. Really, I see a lot of mineral deficiencies as well. So not just your B vitamins, your fat soluble vitamins, but also your minerals. That includes things like your magnesium, your sodium, your chloride, even your copper. And then big time, I see hormonal imbalances. So whether that's low progesterone or estrogen dominance, whether that's low testosterone or high testosterone, it doesn't matter. I see everything under the sun in regards to somebody. So the most important thing is with SIBO, it is very much, it is damaging to your intestines, but it's damaging to your entire body because it's a stressor on your hormones and it's a stressor on your adrenal glands. So your HPA, hypothalamic pituitary axis. Now, when it comes down to common complaints and common comments I hear from my SIBO clients when they come to me and they're questioning, is this truly SIBO? Typically it's, I feel bloated upon waking. I feel like I'm pregnant all day long. Sugar and carbohydrates seem to make things absolutely worse. Of course, there's the, I just can't eat anything without feeling bloated. And I hear, of course, I can't seem to get rid of my acne. I can't seem to get rid of my hives. Can't seem to get rid of my rashes. And of course, we have the I'm on the toilet all day long with the diarrhea, or I can't poop no matter what. So there's a lot of different symptoms that can happen with SIBO. Now with SIBO, the most important thing is testing has its limitations. So I could do a whole nother podcast about this and it would be long and drawn out, but please just know SIBO testing has its limitations because the substrates that we use, both the lactulose and the glucose that we use, can kind of like not really reach the distal, so the farther parts of our small intestine, or even reach down into our large intestine. So with that, we can have false positives or false negatives. So I always use the SIBO test in combination with a GI map, which is basically a stool-based test. Love it. My favorite. But I use those together. And then of course you always, and I always look at the person, their history, their symptoms. What are the potential risk factors for SIBO that they could have? So that's very important. We never, when it comes down to any test, we because we do this together, right? Whenever you're working with me or practitioner, we always treat the person and their symptoms and their history. And we don't just treat the test. We do test, don't guess. So we don't just go based off of symptoms, but we never just treat the test. Always got to go in there with that clinical eye. So the causes of SIBO, there are so many. First cause of SIBO tends to be food poisoning. And that's actually called post-infectious IBS. Mark Pimentel is amazing. And he's one of the people that are, that's kind of like the founders of that post-infection IBS. They're actually coming out with a vaccine, which is super cool, but that's one of the causes. We have medications that could be birth control. That could be PPIs. That could be a chronic use of antibiotics. Gabe's about to bark. You guys say hello to Gabe. Gabe.
Hello, sir.
Okay. Obviously, I don't edit these episodes. Sorry. Okay. So we have medications. This includes antidepressants as well. That could be Zoloft. That could be Wellbutrin. That could be any, I know there's so many of them that could potentially cause heightened intestinal permeability or sluggish motility or nerve damage or nerve changes in your gut that contribute to the potential overgrowth. Low stomach acid, a big time issue. Sometimes this is simply because of chronic stress. Other times this is because maybe a medication, a PPI, H2 antagonist, like your allergy medications that depress your stomach acid. Other times this can be an H. pylori infection because H. pylori competes with your stomach acid. So that's another thing that can hold people back when it comes down to SIBO. Is if you don't get rid of H. pylori and you have H. pylori, or if you don't support your stomach acid and you have low stomach acid, you can continue to get SIBO. Because with low stomach acid, then you're not properly breaking down your foods, specifically your proteins. And then you have the proteobacteria flourishing in your small and large intestine. So low stomach acid. We also have low pancreatic enzymes or bile acid deficiencies. So pancreatic enzymes, they are digestive enzymes produced by your pancreas that help to digest your protein, carbs, and fats. And then bile acid deficiencies, your liver produces bile stored in your gallbladder that helps you to digest your fats and mobilize toxins. But if we do not have these, what we can have is we can have a buildup of bile acids in our, basically our small intestine and our large intestine. They're not reabsorbed. And that can cause issues when it comes out to digesting our foods. And we can have bile sludge. We can also have with the pancreatic insufficiencies, or pancreatic enzyme deficiencies, we have undigested food particles flourishing in our small and large intestine. And guess what? That is food for those microbes. And they're going to ferment on it. And that's when you get the gas and the bloating. And then sometimes people have just a little bit of gas and bloating with that. Then other times you have the true manifestations of a quote unquote SIBO situation. Other things that can cause SIBO, we're looking at abdominal surgeries or intestinal adhesions. Sometimes the adhesions can come from surgeries. So keep this in mind. Sometimes that is, you know, from GI blockages. Sometimes that's because of maybe a hysterectomy. Other times it's from getting your appendix taken out. So there's a lot of different situations that can occur. Unfortunately, intestinal adhesions also can occur if you have kind of like a motility type of issue, or if you have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, in which your ligaments are just, your ligaments and joints are completely like loose, and that can develop intestinal adhesions. We could also see nerve dysfunction or nerve innervation issues. I do see that post adhesions. And I do see that when it comes down to surgeries as well. But some people, unfortunately, do they kind of like grow up not having that, those nerves as active as they should be as well. And then they continue to have like contraction issues. And sometimes that's the nerves themselves. Other times that's issues with the colonic muscles, weak colonic muscles as well. And you don't have proper peristalsis. And so that's where gastroparesis actually can occur as well. Gastroparesis is slow motility. And typically you diagnose that within like the stomach and the slow movement of the different types of your areas of your stomach down into your small intestine. But that slow motility can happen in your small and large intestine as well. We see traumatic brain injuries, concussions, because then you have the hypothalamic pituitary axis, your HPA axis, and you have an issue with the vagus nerve. And that vagus nerve communicates from your small intestines, well, I mean, your entire intestines up to your brain, and it helps to put you into that parasympathetic, which is rest and digest, or sympathetic, which is fight or flight mode. And if there's any issue with the vagus nerve and it's not being activated, you can have issues when it comes down to motility. We also have a poor migrating motor complex, which is basically a fancy term for the sweeping of the bacteria in between our meals to help clean things out. So say that you are eating all throughout the day, you're always snacking, or maybe you have that Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. Maybe you have an issue when it comes down to POTS or mast cell activation disorder. Maybe you have mold toxicity. These things can cause issues with that migrating motor complex. And if we don't have that clean sweeper coming in between our meals, we just have that over fermentation in our small and large intestine. So that's things to think about. Mold toxicity, I mentioned. Mold is toxic to our entire body. It's toxic to our intestinal lining. It's toxic to our liver, our kidneys, our gallbladder, our immune system, our hormones. What is it not toxic to? So mold toxicity can definitely cause SIBO as well as candida infections. Chronic stress, under eating, eating disorders. These all things are also a stressor and a cause of SIBO. And then, of course, we have other things like fistulas, blockages, blind loops, and there are other situations that can occur for some people. But those are the top causes of SIBO. Now, when it comes down to SIBO, the most important thing is we want to test, don't guess. So remember, we have your three main types of SIBO, the hydrogen dominant, the methane dominant, and the sulfur dominant. So when you think hydrogen dominant, I want you to think chronic diarrhea. When you think methane dominant, I want you to think chronic constipation or a mix of constipation and backup diarrhea. And then with hydrogen sulfur, I want you to think of a mix of constipation and diarrhea and rotten smelly gas. Big time with the hydrogen sulfide as well. I see a lot of light sensitivities, chemical sensitivities, skin reactions, and a lot of mood swings there. So the gold standard for testing, we talked about that. That's a lactulose or glucose mannitol test. I do that with my clients. I go through RuPa, which saves you money in regards to testing. And then we use the GI map to confirm as well. Now, when it comes down to looking at the test and then treating accordingly to make sure somebody's rocking and rolling in the right direction, this is why we do the testing, because different antimicrobials and different protocols are best for different types of SIBO. For example, methane-dominant SIBO does very well when we add in what's called garlic or my favorite supplement, which is called Ali Ultra. So if you have methane-dominant SIBO and you're not using an agent with garlic or that like allicin type of extract, you might not be able to get rid of it. And then methane dominant is very, very, very hard to get rid of. This is the hardest SIBO to get rid of. And if you are not using what's called a biofilm disruptor, you are not going to potentially see improvements. Now, some people don't need it, but some people really do. So it truly depends on how symptomatic somebody is. But that's one thing that can hold somebody back from healing is not using a biofilm disruptor. So I love Interphase Plus. That's one of my favorites. There's a biofilm advanced phase 2 that I really like that has a little bit of bismuth in it. Bismuth is so good for sulfur dominant SIBO. It's also very good for getting rid of H. pylori, and it's actually found in Pepto-Bismol. So I know some of my clients that have H. pylori, they're like, why is Lacey telling me to get Pepto-Bismol? And I'm like, that's because it's anti-H. pylori and it's a biofilm disruptor. And they're like, oh, that makes sense. I'm like, yeah. Sorry, you guys, I'm weird. Okay, so we have SIBO that we're going to get rid of and we want to make sure we get rid of. So there are selective treatments that are better for different types of SIBO. I was not going to cover those, but I'm going to go ahead and cover that. So when it comes down to hydrogen dominant SIBO, I typically see that most people respond very well to berberine and oil of oregano. I'm not going to give dosages because my clients pay me for that, but that is something that I definitely see as beneficial. And then I'm also a big fan of combination herbals. So whenever I do a SIBO-based treatment, it's normally I use at least two or three single agents. A single agent would be like garlic or olive oregano or berberine. Or I use a mixture of herbals. For example, Canabactin, AR, and BR. That's a mixture. Or there's the FC-cytal dysbiocide bibiotics that could be used. There's GI microbe X. There is biocidin. There is, what's the other one? I already named it GI microbe X. There is also the GI synergy formula. So there's a lot of mixture formulas. The reason I prefer single agents is because you can dose them much higher. And you can also see how somebody responds to that specific agent. If you throw in a mixture, you don't know if they react negatively, what agent they could be reacting negatively to. For example, there is a product called the Canabactin AR. And if you look in the literature for SIBO, how to cure SIBO, and if you look on like websites all the time, you're going to see these mixtures. You're going to see these different antimicrobials. For example, Canabactin AR, we got thyme, sage, oregano. I've used it so much, I can't believe I just like go based off of the top of my head, but we have thyme, sage, oregano. Some people are very sensitive to that specific type of essential oil in that oregano. So some people are hyperreactive to that and they could be okay with thyme or sage, but it's the essential oil of that oregano that could be very much inflammatory to the gut for them specifically. And some people do better with maybe an emulsified form of oil of oregano. So ADP Bibiotics is my favorite. So that's something that, you know, when it comes down to treatment, sometimes people do good with mixtures. Other times people need that single agent. So I was talking about the different types of when it comes down to like hydrogen, methane, sulfur. So hydrogen, I typically do oil of oregano with berberine or oil of oregano with neem. If something's methane dominant, I typically use allicin with berberine and oil of oregano, or allicin, oil of oregano, neem. And then when it comes down to sulfur dominant SIBO, you can use neem, oregano, berberine, at least two with bismuth. So we typically want to do either a combination of two different combo formulas, or we want to do two to three single antimicrobials at a high dose. With SIBO, you can also, of course, use antibiotics, rifaximin, neomycin, xifaxan. However, I see a lot of people when it comes down to antibiotics have to do reoccurring antibiotic therapy. And also I see them develop deficiency dysbiosis or even flourishing of yeast infections after treatment. So there are, when it comes down to SIBO, you can heal it with antimicrobials or antibiotics, but I do see the antimicrobials do so much better when it comes down to healing. And then of course, I always try and think of how can we add in a biofilm disruptor? And then we talk about diet, lifestyle factors. And then of course, why did you develop SIBO in the first place? Because you can't get rid of SIBO unless you are addressing the root cause of why it developed. Remember, SIBO is truly kind of like it's a symptom. It's a symptom of something else, whether it's that you have those intestinal adhesions, you have pancreatic insufficiency, you have H. pylori, you're chronically stressed, you have mold toxicity, you have parasites, you name it. There's a reason why you develop SIBO. So you have to ask that. And I know a lot of people, like, they get super confused and like, I just want to kill it off. I'm like, okay, I get that. We want to kill it off, but we want to address how did that develop in the first place? Because if we do not, it's going to come back. Nobody wants to go through expensive rounds of SIBO treatment. So we got to put the pieces of the puzzle together. Now, when it comes down to the top mistakes and the reasons why somebody does not heal from SIBO, number one is they didn't find the root cause. So we got to make sure we are addressing why did you develop SIBO in the first place? Is that from your chronic stress? Is it from the mold? Is it from the food poisoning? Is it from the intestinal adhesions? We don't know, but we have to make sure we do that. Another issue, people don't test correctly. Or they just rely on testing as the sole treatment guide. So that's when practitioners will just maybe do a single SIBO test and maybe then they don't do a GI map. Sometimes you can get away with just going with the SIBO test. But if you've done the SIBO test and you've done a round of treatment and somebody's still struggling, you've got to make sure you do multiple testing. And of course, you have to make sure you truly find the potential root causes. Then we have, of course, a specific diet not followed. So with SIBO, we don't want to be too restrictive. We don't want to follow a quote unquote low FODMAP diet and just completely starve the SIBO. But we also don't want to have too much FODMAPs and starchy based foods and too much protein that can overfeed the bacteria in our small and large intestine. So we don't want to starve our bacteria. We don't want to overfeed our bacteria. This is when a dietitian like me is great to come in and give you exacts for you. My goal with my clients, and I know that they love this, I want to give you as much variety and flexibility as physically possible. Because the last thing I want to do is stress you out, stress is going to cause sluggish motility. It's going to contribute to the overgrowth. And also stress is not good for your entire body. So I wish I could like prescribe a vacation for everybody. I wish I could do that, but that's a different part. But definitely when it comes down to SIBO, we don't want to starve it and we don't want to overfeed it. So typically I keep people on the lower end range of a FODMAP, not a low FODMAP diet, but I say, watch your specific foods that you react to. And if there's a higher FODMAP food, maybe for you, it's banana, maybe it's for you, it's avocado, but you can handle another type of higher FODMAP food, then you include the ones that you can handle and then decrease the amounts that you can't. And then I always say like roughage, you've got to decrease that. So make sure that you're doing cooked veggies, if at all possible, no large salads, keep to things that you know are not going to cause you to be more gassy and bloated. For example, don't make yourself a big ass stir fry, right? Because that's going to be a lot for you to digest. And then maybe think when it comes down to your foods, think of veggie volume, right? So maybe for you to get your carbohydrate needs in, some people do tracking macros, other people would just do portion control, but maybe you've got to use those high, more calorically dense foods, especially your fats, to get in more calories. For example, an olive oil is going to be a lot easier to digest. Olive oil, coconut oil, MCT oil is going to be a lot easier to digest than another seed that's more roughage. So diet's a big part of this as well. And we don't want to develop the insufficiency dysbiosis as well, because honestly, people do have the same symptoms as SIBO, even with insufficiency dysbiosis. So something to keep in mind. Another thing people have issues with is they are not treating and repairing the gut lining, and they're not working on potential heightened intestinal permeability. You cannot eradicate an infection, whether that's parasites, candida, or SIBO, if your immune system is not ready for it. So that's very important. That's why for some people, I do a phase one of just simply working on the immune system, the lymphatic, the detox pathways, stress reduction. That way their immune system and their body is going to be able to get rid of the infection or the SIBO or the candida or the parasite or whatever we are working on. So keep that in mind. Then I see people that just make SIBO their identity and they let it become their stressor and their trauma, and they become a victim to their circumstances. And honestly, that prevents people from healing. You can't heal if you are constantly being toxic to your own self. So please don't do that. I know when I had my own mold issues, I was toxic to myself and I was like, woe is me. Like, I'm just so small. I've lost weight. I'm so sad. I have no friends. Yeah. You can't do that because that's going to hold you back. And if you are not also like addressing your mental and emotional health and your spiritual health, that can really hold you back as well. So make sure you are not the root cause of why you're not getting rid of your SIBO. And that leads me into stress. If you're constantly on the go, if you're not properly sitting down, chewing your foods, eating mindfully, making sure you're like 40 chews in a single quote unquote bite. If you're not stress, like reducing your stress levels and you're just go, 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 and you're in that sympathetic mode, that fight or flight, you're still not going to be properly able to digest your foods and then absorb your nutrients, which leads me into stress is an issue, right? But also whether that's overtraining, under eating, or just not taking care of yourself, toxic relationships, toxic self, you name it. That leads me into nutrient deficiencies. If you have nutrient deficiencies, vitamin A and zinc, you're looking at low intestinal permeability. If you have your low B12, low iron, low copper, all your B vitamins, magnesium, vitamin D, you're looking at your immune system, the ability to produce your stomach acid. You're looking at the ability to even have motility, because certain nutrients you need, like zinc, selenium, vitamin A, your B vitamins, folate, to create thyroid hormone. And guess what? You need thyroid hormone, which is the powerhouse of your cell, to have a proper release of stomach acid, bile acid, pancreatic enzymes, motility. So nutrient deficiencies, big time. That's why whenever somebody comes to me with SIBO, I'm like, okay, let's do a full blood panel. Let's see what you could be deficient in. Let's replete it. That way that's not holding you back. Hypothyroidism holds people back. Chronic stress will. Low cortisol or high cortisol will hold you back. And big time hypothyroidism will hold you back. So that's why I'm like, whenever you have SIBO or you have digestive issues, do a full entire blood panel. Let's not just say, okay, let's fix SIBO. Let's figure out what else could be going on. I mentioned the migrating motor complex, that MMC. So that's very important between your meals. So I see that hold people back. They think that they need to do small, consistent meals because that's what they can handle when it comes down to gas and bloating and larger meals they have issues with. But that does not allow the MMC clean sweeper to come in between your meals and clean things out. So that's where we need to make sure that we do not snack throughout the day. We have at least like a good 4 hours between your meals, 3 to 4 hours. optimally. And then we use a prokinetic. So my favorite prokinetics, which are basically things that help to move things through your intestines. They're not laxatives. They just help with motility. Include Motility Activator, Moto Pro, and High Dose Ginger. There are a couple others, but those are my favorites. So I always like to use something as a prokinetic to help. And then also I want to make sure that we use that biofilm disruptor and then that we listen to how somebody is changing. So sometimes what we have to go and do is we have to change the antimicrobials because somebody, they might have bacteria that are resistant to that specific antimicrobial. They might need a more aggressive treatment, or they might be sensitive to one of the agents. They might have more die-off reactions, which die-off is basically when the bacteria release those toxins. It communicates to your brain, and then you have, of course, brain fog, fatigue, muscle aches, joint pain, maybe skin reactions, acne. Die-off is normal, but if somebody continues to have die-off, then they're potentially sensitive to one of the supplements or the ingredients. So you just want to make sure you adjust them. So that's another thing that could hold people back is they follow a set protocol for SIBO and they don't find their Cinderella shoe of healing, or they give up and they say, okay, I'm just not getting better. Let me hop over and find another practitioner. And that's not what you want to do. If you don't give your practitioner time to help change your protocol, then you're not going to potentially see changes. Remember, you are a beautiful unicorn. You deserve to find your Cinderella shoe of healing. And please, patience is key when it comes down to SIBO or any gut healing issue. And I mentioned SIBO could not be just SIBO. So that's another thing that could hold you back. If you're doing just antibiotics that maybe are like rifaximin and only target the small intestine, if you're not targeting the large intestine and you have intestinal methanogen overgrowth, IMO, which is typically common when you're talking about any type of SIBO too, if you're not working on the large intestine and you have only worked on the small intestine, you're still going to be symptomatic. So those are the top things that hold people back. Big time, I don't want you guys to do any of that. And then also lifestyle factors. So that incorporates like the stress, but that also incorporates not working on your vagus nerve and not working on your parasympathetic system. So yoga, meditation, hypnotherapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, acupuncture, abdominal massage. And then of course, working on your detox, drainage, lymphatic pathways can be very helpful as well. So with Gabe, can you not?
Thank you, sir.
You know, I just can't. Okay. So when we're talking about like detox, drainage, lymphatic pathways, I'll do an entire other podcast on that. But I want you to think we want to get rid of toxins. We want to move toxins through our body. So pooping, sweating, breathing. So breath work, pooping on a daily basis, and of course, moving things along. So that could be walking throughout the day, dry brushing, lymphatic massage, rebounding. We want to do things like that. And then when it comes down to detoxing, that doesn't mean you have to do like a detox tea or a full detox protocol, but supporting your detox pathways, especially like your liver and your gallbladder, that might be with a little bit of, bile support, whether it's castor oil packs or liver support formulas, or focusing on liver support naturally via your diet. So more dandelion, burdock, rhubarb, beets, things that help like release bile from that gallbladder or create it within your liver can be helpful to add into your diet as much as you can tolerate. So those are the things that can like hold people back from SIBO. And then big time I see with SIBO, people also have a candida infection. I've done an entire podcast on candida. So please refer back to that. Okay. So we've gone over a lot here. I also want to go over the kind of like things that you can also do to help in regards to your SIBO-based treatment. Now, when it comes down to SIBO, some people, they need to go through what's called an elemental diet. So an elemental diet is a broken down protein, carbohydrate, very like, easily digestible shake that people use. Typically, this is when somebody is severely having issues and they have not been able to get rid of SIBO with maybe two rounds of antibiotics or antimicrobials. So this is my last ditch effort. You can do an elemental diet. Dr. Russo, I believe, has a great elemental diet formula, but you can also do it yourself using dextrose or honey, a pea protein powder, a broken down protein powder. So that would be last resort, but that's something that could be very helpful if somebody is continuously not able to get rid of their SIBO. I also mentioned things that we want to do to help support the gut. So when we talk about other things that you can add in to your quote unquote medicine cabinet for SIBO, I talked about the MMC. So we have the motility activator, the Motopro and high dose ginger. Those are for helping with your migrating motor complex. We can talk about biofilm disruptors, whether that can be N-acetylcysteine or the Interphase Plus or the bioadvanced phase two product. There are also things like monolaurin or a black seed oil that can be very helpful. There's bismuth. And then we're talking about things that can help with gas or bloating. So Iberogast, or there's a formula I really like that's also good for parasites. It's called Intestinal Edge Activated Charcoal. You got to be careful with this one because it binds and steals away your nutrients and minerals, but can help with gas and bloating. And then we also look at any other binders, whether that's fulvic humic acids, like the Cellcor binder. I love that binder. It's my favorite. It's the biotoxin binder. It's absolutely great. Message me if you need access to that one, but that one's my favorite for binding and for die-off. There's also another formula called GI Detox I absolutely love. And then you can do digestive bitters. Digestive bitters help with stomach acid, pancreatic support, bile release. There's a great formula by Urban Moonshine, Vitanica. Then we also have, of course, supporting your stomach acid, apple cider vinegar. Now that is, you know, there's a controversy if that helps or hinders you when it comes down to methane dominant SIBO. I truly think, and based on my experience, it just helps people. So that's something to keep in mind is apple cider vinegar. If you don't have H. pylori, you can do betaine, hydrochloric acid. And then we have digestive enzymes if you need it, ox bile if you need it, liver support if you need it. And then most importantly, when it comes down to like helping when it comes down to like your intestinal lining, we have things like colostrum powder, we have L-glutamine, collagen, CBD oil, we have aloe vera, marshmallow root. There's a lot of different good combo formulas. There's Gastro One powder, there's GI Resolve, there's GI Revive, there's Dr. Danielle's leaky gut formula that I recently just tried and I absolutely love the taste of that. But there's a lot of different things that you can do. And then of course there's herbal laxatives. There's Cascara. You can use magnesium oxide or magnesium citrate, Antrentil. Ginger sometimes can kind of be a prokinetic and a laxative. Then there's also some great formulas like New Poos by, I got to Google this one second. New Poo by Umzu. Yeah. And then the Cellcore Bowel Mover, that one's fantastic because it's got some aloe in it, which is a laxative too. So you got the aloe or senna or cascara that are really great. You don't want to use these long-term, but they can be very helpful short-term when it comes down to just helping somebody go to the bathroom. Because you got to be, if you have methane dominant SIBO, you have to be pooping on a daily basis. Tools in your toolbox too, when it comes down to like hydrogen dominant SIBO to stop diarrhea, banana flakes, psyllium husk, your whole grain oats. Those can all be helpful because they draw water into the intestines and they help kind of like sometimes produce a bowel movement, but most importantly, they stop that diarrhea because we don't want that to keep going. Activated charcoal can also help with that. I missed out on, let's see, probiotics. Yeah. So probiotics with SIBO can either be fire on a gas. They could be gas on a fire, so fire fluid on a fire. We don't want to do that, or they can help in healing. So probiotics that I love include Saccharomyces boulardii, soil-based probiotics like Megaspore or Just Thrive. I'm a big fan of like different high dose, like 50 billion or 100 billion after treatment. So sometimes that's ProBioMed. And there's a lot of good like high dose probiotics. There's the HEMF intensive, but that's after treatment. And then another thing I really like doing are specific fiber powders, like partially hydrolyzed guar gum. This is actually in the literature to help you with keeping away SIBO and reducing the chance of a relapse. So that's another thing people don't do is they don't add in PHGG that can help them with getting rid of their SIBO. So that would be some tools in your toolbox there. And then I'm a big fan when it comes down to like not just those tools in your toolbox, but you got to add in what else you're deficient in, whether you're deficient in vitamin D, your magnesium, your vitamin A, your B vitamins, or you need, you're deficient in happiness. So you need to go on a vacation or you need to stress less or take less hours in your work or something. You got to take care of yourself. And then stress reduction. I mean, I'm a big fan of using adaptogens to help support you and you're getting rid of SIBO as well. Adaptogens do what they say. They help your body in adapting to the stress response. So some adaptogens are calming, some are nourishing, some help to increase cortisol or linger it in the body for longer. My favorite is, of course, my stress defender with ashwagandha, magnolia in it, some L-theanine. That's my favorite, of course, because I created it. But there's also some really good adaptogens. Like we have licorice, which keeps cortisol in your body longer. So that's helpful for low cortisol. We have ashwagandha, which is just overall nourishing, doesn't bring it up or down. Magnolia can help in regards to just nourishing. So it doesn't technically always bring it up or down. Bacopa is really good for lowering cortisol. L-theanine is good for lowering cortisol. There's a lot of good different adaptogens like phosphatidylserine that I love phosphatidylserine for high cortisol. So there's a lot of different things you could do. Panax ginseng, rhodiola, cordyceps. Cordyceps is actually probably my second favorite. Maybe my new favorite. We'll see. But those are all great things to incorporate if you have SIBO as well. And then of course, you know, you got to make sure you're focusing on diet, lifestyle, supplementation. Most important thing. So if you have ever had an issue getting rid of SIBO, you got to ask, why did I develop it, right? And you have to ask yourself, what are the potential internal and or external stressors that could stop me from healing? So this episode was a lot longer than I thought I was going to make, but I hope it was helpful for you guys. And the most important thing is if you need help, don't hesitate to hit me up. I've gone through SIBO myself. It freaking sucks. I had hydrogen dominant SIBO. I hate telling people, oh, guess what? I had diarrhea, but I mean, I did. It was terrible. I had SIBO, Candida, H. pylori. I had parasites too, all from my mold toxicity because I suppressed immune system. So the most important thing is I've been there. I know how it feels to not feel like you can even think. So having that brain fog or what I call the gremlin on your head, to having that constant bloating, feeling exhausted all the time, having mood swings, getting angry all of a sudden, the nutrient deficiencies, the muscle wasting, not seeing your fruits of your labor in the gym. So sad. I totally get that and I've been there. So if you guys need help, don't hesitate to reach out. I'm always here for you. And I hope this episode is very helpful. If you guys need support, my Instagram, I try and make it just educational for you guys. So make sure to look through all my posts. I post a lot on Instagram. So check those out. Check out my other previous podcasts, whether it's talking about parasites or candida or stress reduction or how to reverse diet, you name it. I've done so many. And then most importantly, share this podcast. Please leave me a review and then let me know what you guys want to learn about. That I just want to make sure this podcast is rock and rolling in the right direction in the best way that I can support you guys. And also let me know if you like these episodes in which they're like not scripted and I'm just going like based off of like what's in my head today. So if you like these, I hope you do. I'll keep doing them. If you like the double podcast episodes with guests, I'll keep doing those. And if you want a mixture, let me know. I just want to make sure I'm helping you best. So hope you guys have a blessed rest of your day. I am going to also request if anybody wants any prayers to also send them over to me in Instagram as well. I want to be a prayer warrior for you guys as well. So hope you guys have a great day. Thanks for listening and I will be back shortly. Bye.